There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Go Steelers! Go Steelers! Say go Steelers! Go Steelers! Yeah, 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 yeah.
Welcome to the Steelers Outpost Podcast, a proud member of the Armchair All-Americans Network. We are so pleased to bring you this special midweek episode. It's a preview episode of the San Francisco 49ers game against the Steelers, but more importantly, we're going to get insight from an NFL veteran. We welcome to the show Eric Davis, formerly of the San Francisco 49ers, Carolina Panthers, and a couple of years at the Broncos and Lions. He played for 13 years in the NFL, earning All-Pro three times and also a Super Bowl champion. This guy gives us such insight. It was such an interesting show. We were supposed to be on with him for 15 minutes. It went on much longer than that. So we are very appreciative to Eric and also to the Believe Network. It's a podcast platform where Eric has a show with a co-host about the San Francisco 49ers. So without further ado, Eric Davis.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are here with NFL superstar, three-time All-Pro, Super Bowl champion, superstar on television, analyzing the game of football to boot. We're here with Eric Davis. Eric, how's it going, my man?
I am holding on for an old man. That's a great introduction, man. You need to follow me around.
We can arrange that. It can happen.
You make it
easy with your accolades.
I don't know. If I can get a soundtrack with that, man, I could go somewhere. That's pretty good.
I don't want to go too far out of bounds here, but I do have a band and we got a studio, so we can already start working on a theme song after this, maybe.
Okay.
Depending on how this goes, yeah.
Okay, we'll talk.
Yeah, something funky. But either way, right now, that's neither here nor there. We got to talk some ball because huge game between, well, two teams in completely opposite directions at the moment. We got the 49ers hosting the Steelers this weekend, and I want to get into that game. But first, maybe shockingly to some people, there's drama going on in Pittsburgh.
No.
For once. Yeah.
Never.
Right. Well, we think that you can maybe set some of this straight and maybe we can get some positivity in here. If you wouldn't mind, we're going to start with some of this Pittsburgh stuff and then we can move into the game.
Works for me.
All right. So big news. First things first, Steelers just traded a first round pick for defensive back Minka Fitzpatrick from the Miami Dolphins. Now, we know that a lot of people are sort of conflicted on whether the Steelers should have traded that pick or not. With Ben Roethlisberger being out, people don't know how he's going to respond or if he'll respond from the injury. But I don't really want to focus on that as much as I'd love to get is your opinion as a defensive back. I don't know if you've had the chance to study or watch Minka play at all, but I just wanted to see what you think of him as a player and as a prospect, and especially bearing in mind that I wouldn't call him a tweener, but he's kind of a guy who doesn't have a definitive position. And I wanted to see if maybe you had any opinions on whether that helps you in today's NFL because of all the versatility that offenses show, or maybe it could be a negative thing, like a jack of all trades, master of none.
Well, starting off, he's worth the number one pick. It makes sense. It doesn't matter whether Ben is hurt or not. That's irrelevant because Ben doesn't play defensive back. Ben doesn't cover a slot. He doesn't cover tight ends in space. He doesn't tackle anyone. So you need that on the defensive side of the ball if you want to improve, if you want to play football the way the Pittsburgh Steelers do it down the road. That's the first thing you look at it. Is this guy worth the number one pick? Yes.
Right.
Coming out of college a couple of years ago, I personally thought he was the best overall player in the draft.
Wow.
Just looking at positions, I thought he was the best overall player. And you talk about him being a hybrid in today's game. That's what you need on your defensive side of the ball. For players that play in space. You look at teams now and you look at linebackers. Days are gone where you have the thumpers, the big Ray Lewis guys. The game is changing. your linebackers are getting into the Mark Barron type, where you have a guy, even you look at Thomas Davis, you get these safeties, you get them on the training table, you beef them up because these guys can work in space. They can cover tight ends. They're big enough, strong enough to tackle and take on blocks. A lot of them are just fast enough to outrun some of the big linemen, and that's how they work well in the blocking scheme. But you got to be able to cover in space. You have to be able to run, still tackle, work around the ball. That's what you need DBs to do. Minka can do that.
Of course.
He can cover in the slot. He can play a high safety in space. He has good range, good speed. He can tackle in open space. He knows how to tackle on his back, which is a major thing for a DB in the NFL, and a lot of guys coming out of college don't understand how to tackle on your back. And by that, I mean, you have to understand that you're going to be one-on-one with the Le'Veon Bells of the world. And you have to understand how to give up your body, know you're going to get run over. It's going to be ugly, but you can get a guy down and survive to the next. Ryan Clark was a master of that. For Pittsburgh for years. I mean, he would be that last line of defense, but Ryan always made that tackle, which is why he was so valuable, because you could let Troy run all over the place, but Ryan always made that tackle if whatever Troy decided to do didn't work. Totally. Minka is one of those type players. So does he make that team better once he learns the scheme and get everything in? Yes. Yes. So, I mean, everyone goes crazy over these picks. And the value of a first round pick. You don't know what you're going to get with that first round pick. It may not work out. I mean, I understand the value of that pick, but there is not a safety coming out that's going to be better next year than Minka.
Exactly. 100%. And he's the thing is, and with him too, the Steelers have had, I'm not even going to say they've had trouble drafting or developing defensive backs. They just straight up haven't been able to do it since Troy came around, and they brought Joe Hayden in. They brought Steven Nelson in at the corners, and those guys are the two best players that they have in the secondary currently. And so bringing in Minka, I mean, first off, when they started talking about Minka Fitzpatrick being available for trade a couple days before Ben got injured, we just, the whole fan base and us here on the podcast, we were all over it, because you finally get a chance to nab one of these top 10 talents. And the Steelers just did that with Devin Bush. And this is just, it's insane for Steelers fans, because we've been spoiled to watch the team draft in the 20s for many years. So you never really have the chance to get one of those elite prospects. And now here you have a guy in Minka who not only has 4 years left on his deal, but he's got some tape already that shows, yeah, this guy is going to adjust to the NFL. How high can he climb? We'll find out. Does it make us nervous that he's going to have to learn under the Steelers defensive staff? Yes, it does. But that's why you take a guy who's a little bit more of a known quantity. So I'm with you. Not to mention the fact that the only reason why people would be upset about giving up this top 10 pick, because Minka is worth that. The only reason why they'd be upset about it is because people are assuming, oh, you're going to draft Ben's successor in the top 10. And first off, there's only two QBs coming out. There's Tua and Herbert. And one of them is going to Miami, because we know they're getting number one. And then the other one, like, you're going to have to be the second worst team in the league just to get that second guy. So you don't even know if that would work out. And Ben committed to come back. So, yeah, I'm with you. Getting an elite player at a position where you've had no success developing those guys, I mean, that's a win-win. You can take my first-round pick any day.
Well, the other part of that is that you just drafted a quarterback in the third round.
100%.
You just got a quarterback. No one. I don't understand why a fan base goes crazy over that. What team just gives away third-round picks? What team drafts a player in the third round with no hopes of him ever developing into a player? Not no good ones. That's how teams get better. That's how teams actually survive and sustain winning. Look, the Pittsburgh Steelers are all about that. Look at the wide receiver position. They don't draft them in the first round. They draft them in later rounds, and they developed all of these guys. And we can go down a list from Hines Ward until now. That's what they do. You drafted a quarterback. Rudolph was drafted because you thought he could turn into a solid starter for you. That's what you draft first, second, and third round. These are guys you expect to be starters one day. You believe that they have the talent to do it. I have a lot of faith in that personnel staff there with that Pittsburgh has, because they have proven that they are capable of finding players in later rounds. And the third round is not a later round. Again, that's a guy that you expect to play. Now, he's there sooner than expected. But so to go back and say, well, we're upset because we may have to draft one of those other quarterbacks. You already had that quarterback on your roster. You weren't thinking about getting another quarterback. That wasn't even in the cards. The guy that you're trying to develop, guess what? He gets to do now. Get better. You can learn a lot watching a great player. You can learn from Ben's mistakes being in that room. You can learn what he sees and why he saw it and why he made a certain play. But the only way Rudolph is going to get better ever is to get on the field. Now he has a chance to get better, and you get to see and what you have moving forward. I wouldn't be upset if I'm the fan base there. I wouldn't be upset about the opportunity to get a good player now that you, as you just mentioned, he's under contract. You're able to do things around this because you know where his money is going to be for quite some time. And this is a guy that you have an opportunity once again to have one of those hybrid players that can make plays across the field in a lot of different situations and give a defensive coordinator an opportunity to really have some fun back there. You should feel good about that aspect of it, as opposed to worrying about what you're going to do down the road if Ben's not there when you already drafted a quarterback to be his successor.
Totally. And now that move looks even smarter, doesn't it? Drafting that Mason Rudolph. And actually that segues kind of nicely into another thing I wanted to talk to you about regarding Pittsburgh, which is you're talking about Mason Rudolph and other NFL players being able to actually get better when they're not playing, like in terms of what you were saying about him being able to learn from Ben. And then obviously he's going to get a lot better when he gets on the field experience. But there are some things that go into a season in terms of a team either playing better or playing worse or having the right mindset. And in Pittsburgh, it just seems like there is constant sort of national drama going on around the team. And whether it's Bell and Brown over the whole last season, and then Brown gets out of Pittsburgh and that finally dies down, and then he goes to the Patriots and it gets fired back up, and a week goes by and Ben gets hurt, and we don't even get 2 days and they trade their first round pick for the first time in like 50 years. So there's always something going on in Pittsburgh. And I just wanted to know, from somebody who's been in winning locker rooms and been in NFL locker rooms and been in that battle, do you think those type of things, like outside noise, does that really affect the quality of play of the players? Or are they being serious when they're saying, no, it's just outside noise and it really doesn't affect us at all?
It really doesn't affect you at all unless you have to talk about it, unless it affects you. It's really, I know it sounds, you know, funny and cliche-ish, but there's not a single player in that room that has anything to do with a first-round draft pick being traded, correct?
Right.
Right.
Correct.
There's not a single player that has anything to do with a new player coming onto the squad or a player leaving the squad. That happens all the time. Transactions happen all the time. There's nothing you can do about it. So you don't concern yourself with it, whether it's Minka coming in or if it's someone on the squad that's in the locker right next to you getting cut and leaving. You have no control over it. You talk about it, you know, when you walk in and you see that the guy is gone, and then you move from there. I actually played with a guy who literally read the Sporting Green up in the Bay Area when I was playing for the Niners. He realized that he had been cut reading the morning paper.
So it's a tweet. Back then it was the paper, right?
Yes, it's a tweet now. Back then it was a paper. You know, right. It was like one of those. He showed up for work, didn't know he was cut, and he read it in the morning paper. And so it's one of those things. And what do? You go on to your meeting and you practice and you go about your day. There's nothing you can do about it. So those things don't concern you. It's only when you have to deal with it and talk about it. I played for the Carolina Panthers when there was a murder investigation going on with Ray Caruth. That affects you because you're out practicing and federal agents are pulling guys off the field saying, we'd like to question you about this.
Wow.
Now it affects you because it affects your craft. It affects your mindset. It affects your ability to actually prepare for a game. Then that's affecting you. players being on the team, AB drama, Le'Veon Bell not being there, Le'Veon Bell not showing up, all these, it doesn't affect you. They're not lying because you have no control over it. You can only control what you put on. I had a coach, Bill McPherson, used to always say, autograph your performance. You get to decide exactly. The one control that you have as an NFL player is what you put on film. You can't decide if you're going to start, if you're going to be benched, if you're going to be cut. You can't. The only thing is whether it is what you put on film. So you get to sign your name to that. And players know that. That's just a part of it. So, no, it's a real thing when you say it doesn't affect me. I'm not concerned about it. That's outside noise. It really is. And I think that's why Pittsburgh has done so well over the years when you have these national stories about what's going on. They have a coach that has explained to all the guys. I mean, Coach T lets them know, do your job. Yeah. Do what you're supposed to do. Focus on what you're supposed to be focused on. And you win football games that way. And I think that's the mindset of that club. It's been established from way back, and it's just a part of the culture there. Just like there's a certain way you, as a Pittsburgh fan, you expect your team to win in a certain fashion. Certain brand of football, it's a certain philosophy that they have, and that's a part of their philosophy. So, yeah, I don't think the guys are bothered by it.
Eric, I'm listening very carefully. This is really interesting. I was distinguishing between Le'Veon Bell, who I thought he paid the price. He was willing, you know, he was at the end of the contract. Mm-hmm. He sat out a year and he got his new contract. I thought that was absolutely legitimate, at least from a business standpoint. And he was pretty clear about what he was trying to get. Uh-huh. With AB, the Steelers gave AB everything he wanted, everything he asked for. He was in the middle of his contract and he abandoned ship. You know, as human beings, I just would feel resentful. I mean, you guys do rely on, you do have to put your game out there, but you do rely on your fellow players, mm-hmm. The rest of your team. Do people feel any resentment about a guy who cuts out in the middle of a contract when you're depending on him to make a drive to the Super Bowl?
Well, first of all, the only people that actually really know, and I can just look at it with players that I played with, the only ones that actually know the true story, the full story, are the ones that were there in the locker room.
Yeah.
Not what's reported, not what's tweeted, but you have to be there and live it, because there are a lot of different reasons as to why a guy is on the sideline in a fur coat. And you have to know the backstory on it, because is it that this guy just said, I quit and I don't want to play? Or are there other underlying reasons as to why? What was the conversation that led up to that moment? What was the push and pull? Did this guy try to play and he was told not to? All the different reasons and how the information get out, you have to be able to assess all of that. If a guy just decides he doesn't want to play, I played with the guy once, 1 year in Denver. We had a receiver. I can't even think of his name right now. That's how much I erased him. Where he literally decided that he didn't want to play, and he just walked in. He's like, guys, I'm quitting. I mean, like a Wednesday or a Thursday or something like that. It may have been a Thursday or a Friday. He was like, I'm not playing. I don't want to play football. And so that was it. Now that bothered me, because you've been a part of the game plan. Guys' livelihood are wrapped into this. And then you just decide, well, you don't feel like playing, you're going to quit. Do you have the right to do that? That's fine. But then, the next week you come back, I want to play. And I just told the guys, I was like, you know what? My first year on this team, I was a vet. I was like my 11th, 12th year. I was like, this is your team. I'm going to let you guys and the hierarchy of this team that have earned the right to be Broncos, you decide. But me personally, no, because I don't know when you go quit again.
Yep.
But whatever you guys decide, that's what we'll go with. And they decided they wanted to play, and I was fine with it. I'm going to work with it because I don't have to like you to play with you. And it wasn't even a dislike thing. It was just a trust. I don't know how invested you are. So resentment isn't a word that I would use, because you understand the business. If a guy feels like he's outperformed his contract, I don't think there's a player that has a problem with the guy asking for money. And you know, and John Q. Fan always says, well, he's under contract. You have to stop with that. Everyone listening, stop with that, because the contract is irrelevant in the NFL because of the fact that if the team decides you're underperforming, they cut you. If the team decides that that we need to move this money somewhere else, they'll ask you to take a pay cut. So the contract really is irrelevant. It's about leverage. No one gets paid what they're worth. You get paid what you are in position to negotiate. So if you think you are in a good negotiating position, you ask for money. Just like when a team thinks they're in a good negotiating position, they will take money from you. That's just the way it works. So resentment is, that's not the word I would ever use. And I don't think anyone resented AB for the business aspect of it. I don't know all the other underlying stories, and no one ever knows because you're hearing so much about it now.
Yeah,
that he's gone when guys weren't talking about it then, and that's football though, because questionable character it's always superseded by extreme talent. That's just the way it is. Extreme talent supersedes questionable character, questionable decisions, what people call rowdy or rude or whatever, this hard teammate to deal with, or this diva attitude. If you're balling, nobody cares. Period. Not even the organizations. Not the Rooneys, not the Tomlins of the world. Nobody cares if you're balling.
And they didn't. And it was working, and it worked for a while. And you made a great point just talking about, like, the only thing that complicates it is that you're part of the game plan. And with AB, and if we're just using AB as an example, it's like the team is going to win or lose more games based on whether he's on the team or not. And maybe guys who are on the fringe, if the team's more successful, they have more chance to get a job. But at the end of the day, it's like what you said, it's put the autograph on the film so people know that they have bigger issues at hand, having to perform themselves to keep their own jobs, I would imagine, or to audition for their next job. And that is actually a nice segue kind of into some of the performances that are going to have to happen this weekend in San Francisco. So if we're switching our focus here over to the game, there's you look at both sides of the ball. The very first thing as a Pittsburgh Steelers fan that sticks out to me about this game, if you ignore the obvious fact that Ben's not playing and the expectations are a little bit different game to game. Well, if by a little, I mean a lot different game to game for the Steelers. But the first thing that sticks out to me is this, is the 49ers offense versus the Steelers defense. The Steelers defense, it has – some communication issues, which is if you want to say that, you can't say that phrase to Pittsburgh audiences, because we get that in all the interviews for the past 6 years. Oh, there was communication issues. There's still communication issues. Basically, they get manipulated easily when they play against elite offensive coordinators or elite veteran quarterbacks. Otherwise, they hold their own nicely. But you see why there's all these memes of Steelers linebackers covering number one receivers on the opposing team. And it's not even really an exaggeration. Like, you can go through the film and it happens a lot, which just tells you that good offensive coordinators are able to decipher the defensive rules on the Steelers team and kind of abuse them. And you got Kyle Shanahan, who's just about as good as anybody at doing just that. So from a Steelers fan perspective, that's a bit scary. So bearing that in mind, how do you think the Steelers would need to attack the 49ers defense in order to have any success against it? Or excuse me, the other way around, the offense or the defense for the Steelers, how would they be able to stop Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo on offense?
Okay. Well, starting off, communication problems that, you may hear it, but it's a real thing when you have a group of guys that the part of defense that people really don't focus on and pay attention to is just that the amount of communication out there. Everyone assumes that defensive players just make a call, line up, and then you just play. Well, you have all these offenses, and every single time someone moves on offense, there's an adjustment that has to be made on defense. So there's constant communication. So you may start off and you are in man coverage. I can just tell you, like, the defense that I played with the 49ers. I mean, we had 263 defenses, and everyone had a minimum of five variations. A minimum of five variations. Every time someone moved, because our coordinators and the way George, that was George Seifert's defense, and the way that defense was set up, it was set up so that every adjustment, you had an opportunity to put your players in the best position for success. I played in this. I played with Dom Capers, who we know came from, you know, that 3-4 defense, and how it is very similar to what they're doing up in Pittsburgh right now. That rough zone system. Again, there's a lot of communication, and it's a question of guys getting themselves in position and understanding not just what they're doing, what everyone else is doing. And we started this discussion talking about a lot of new players coming in, free agents coming in. It's been a while since you had a group of guys in Pittsburgh play together an extended period on defense. That has something to do with the communication, understanding, because it goes beyond what you're supposed to be doing. It's what the guy around you is doing, because that's one of the most important parts of football, is not just knowing what you're supposed to do, but knowing whose tit you're putting in a ringer if you don't do what you're supposed to do. Who are you screwing up if you're not where you're supposed to be? You have to understand that. Now, as far as Kyle and this defense, you know, attacking Kyle, you know that he's going to do a lot of window dressing. This offense is predicated on not play action, but run
misdirection
action.
Maybe.
Yes, it's not even. It's so. So that's it. It's not even so much. It's not even so much misdirection. It's run action. He's going to run plays, and he's going to run these plays, and he's going to have the H-back come, and you're going to know what this is, a lead coming to this direction. He's going to have the fullback. The fullback is out there most of the time, probably, you know, 45-50% of the time. He's going to lead you to plays, but then all of a sudden that exact same action is going to be a pass. And so you get this run action. He wants to run the ball and where you have to defend it and get everyone moving. And once he knows how you're going to move, then he knows this is where the hole is going to be. And he's going to have Jimmy to try to get the ball to a receiver in that position. And then he'll have one of those receivers that's a part, or the tight end Kittle, that's a part of that blocking action, that run action, now escape to get to that hole that run action creates. That's what happens. So I think you have to attack. First of all, you got to play sound against the run. If the run gets going, then it's just way too hard. Kyle is he's very good at just doing just what we just said, just diagnosing what a defense will have to do. So if you don't stop the run, then it's going to make it very difficult to stop those quick passes. So I would focus on that. I would definitely focus on making certain that you take that aspect of it away and make Jimmy have to stand in the pocket and throw the ball. He still stares down receivers. Once you get 8 yards or more, he will stare down his receiver and give you an opportunity to make plays. And also, switch up your coverages in the back. So back to the communication, you have to be able to switch up coverages because Jimmy, I mean, this is what, start number 12 or something like that for him. I mean, he threw an interception last week. Why? Because it was open in practice.
Right.
because this is up and down
for him so far this year, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, well, you know, he threw a pick six. And the interception he threw his last game, it's simply because those are plays that Shanahan drew up and told him, hey, this is what the defense is going to do. This is the guy you can expect to be open. He wasn't even looking for anything else. I mean, this against Cincinnati, he just threw the ball. There was no reason he should have thrown that ball. But the play design was so that the corner would bite on the short route and the crossing route would then run over to the void left behind him. Well, the corner didn't bite. And Jimmy just threw the ball anyway. So you know you have a young, developing quarterback. And remember what I said earlier? You don't get better until you get on the field. Yes, Jimmy has learned some things watching Brady, but he has to first now get it on the field himself. You can take advantage of those plays. When he gives you those opportunities, so far, he's done it every game. Pittsburgh has to take advantage of it. So that's the way I would look at this. I would make Jimmy Garoppolo prove to me that he could beat me, and not Raheem Mostert or Breida.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we'll just probably have to put I'll talk to Coach T, get him to put six or seven people on Kittle, because the Steelers have been getting carved up by no-name tight ends, and now they're playing one of the best ones, period. But no, that's awesome analysis. And I was actually I'm glad you talked about Jimmy Garoppolo, because he's been an interesting case. It's funny because his name's been out there for a long time, but you're right. What is it, like 12 starts or whatever it is?
Yeah, and played.
And yeah, it all comes off of that.
They keep talking about franchise action, quarterback, and I told some people today up in the Bay, stop it. Like, stop it.
We'll see.
It's not even we'll see. I want to see if he's a solid starter. Ben Roethlisberger is a franchise quarterback. This is Aaron Rodgers, franchise quarterback. That's a friend. Tom Brady, of course, franchise quarterback. There's a difference between a solid starter. Andy Dalton is a solid starter. He is. And in some cases, you can say even a franchise quarterback. Why? Because he gives your team opportunities year in and year out. He at least gets you to the playoffs, in which you have an opportunity to win a championship. Franchise quarterbacks give you an opportunity to win the chip. That's it. Kirk Cousins is not a franchise quarterback. He's a well-paid starter, but he's not a franchise quarterback. Jimmy Garoppolo hasn't done a damn thing for a franchise. How can he be a franchise quarterback? He started 12 games. So that's what I want to see. Can he even develop into a consistent, solid starter? We've seen a lot of guys have a good year. But the league, the league will break you down.
So it sounds like these guys, and understandably so, these guys is when they first get on the field are kind of dogmatic. They're just following what they're told at the beginning. It's just too hard to on the fly make decisions. They just need to get used to being out there.
Absolutely.
This is Mason Rudolph, obviously. He's just got to follow what he's told at the beginning. He can't really freelance.
Now, he's not going to do a lot of, it will come in and you will see him scramble and you'll see him do some things, but he's not going to walk to the line of scrimmage and have the freedom that Ben would have, because Ben is the playbook. You know what I mean?
Right.
Ben, for him. He is the game plan. He knows exactly what they want to do. So now when you look at Rudolph has been sitting in those same meeting rooms. He's been hearing everything that's going on. So do I expect him to have a grasp of the offense? Yes. Do I expect him to have an understanding of what's going on and be able to get his reads down? Yes. But as things start to happen in real time, That's where the inexperience comes in, because of the way you're going to have to react in real time when something happens that you weren't expecting. How calm are you going to be? We've seen Ben get fooled by a coverage, but then dance around, find a way to get time, throw a guy down, and know that, okay, if I can last long enough, this guy who was staying in protection will be able to leak out and I can dump the ball off to him. Those are things that happen over time that you won't get from Rudolph.
Totally. And that's a great transition, actually, into the other side of the ball. Kind of last thing we wanted to cover here. By the way, thanks for your time, man. I know we're kind of running over here, but
No, we're good. I told you, just three guys talking ball, man. I like it. I enjoy it.
Hey, that's what we're here for. That's what the listeners are here for. So you're talking about Mason Rudolph, and we're talking about Mason Rudolph, and I think people are excited to see him in his first game action. He definitely made noticeable strides in the preseason, and even in the action he had last week, he made noticeable strides from year one into year two. And he does not possess the elite end, just pure talent that Ben Roethlisberger has.
Who does? From
the few people ever, baby. Let's go.
Yeah,
come on back next year. That's please,
why,
God.
That's why he's going to the Hall of Fame. I mean, Ben is special. Right. So that's number one thing. Before you even finish this, the number one thing is don't compare him to Ben. That's not the issue. That's not totally the question. That's not even the question. The question is can he be efficient within the offensive scheme? That's what you need to ask.
Yes, and that's why I liked what you were talking about, wanting to see if Garoppolo or Cousins, are these guys even just decent in starters? Well, that's what we're kind of looking for from Mason Rudolph, who he was drafted, and now it looks incredibly smart that they drafted him, because – Did people think he was going to be the successor to Ben? Is he going to be a bridge? Is he going to be a good backup option to Ben if he goes down? Well, now we're going to see. In a worst case scenario, hopefully he can be a decent bridge or a stopgap right now when we have unexpectedly lost Ben for the year for the first time in his career. So when you're looking at the Steelers offense versus the 49ers defense, it's a little bit odd because the Steelers offense, it doesn't even have a personality right now. And maybe that can actually be an advantage for them because they can come out with the element of surprise. But with Ben aching in the first two games and them running a ton of this five wide and trying to figure out how is our offense going to run without the traditional Ben to AB break glass in case of emergency type of strategy, they've been kind of floundering. But when Mason got in there, they moved the ball a little bit. When I think of the San Francisco defense, and we haven't gotten to watch them play a lot, obviously NFC opponent, but I do think there's been a ton of just capital invested in that front seven. Uh-huh. And obviously, you know, the big ones are Nick Bosa and then signing D Ford. I don't know if D Ford is going to play or not. And then obviously the interior lineman with Buckner and I don't know, you know, Solomon Thomas and these big names that they've acquired. And I just wanted to same sort of question that we asked on the other side of the ball. If the Steelers are going to want to have success against the 49ers defense, where will they want to attack?
Number one, you don't want to throw the ball. They averaged 41 times last year. Another reason why I love Ben, just I'm not going to stay on Ben, but a reason I love Ben is because Ben could win a game whatever way was necessary. If he needed to hand it off 35 times, his ego didn't stop him from prevent him from doing that to win a game. If he needed to throw it 55 times, he was good enough to survive back there. And throwing it 55 times, you're going to get hit a lot. He was able to survive that and win games that way. I think, you know, Rudolph, you don't want him to stand back there and throw the ball 40, 50 times versus this front. They can rush. They'll send some pressure. Every now and then they'll send five guys, you know, maybe once or twice, six guys, but it's normally their front four. They have six guys that are legitimate starters, and they rotate those guys and they keep them fresh and they can hunt. They can get to the quarterback in that aspect. Run the ball. It's going to be interesting to see what's happening with Connor. He has that knee, and last I heard that he's not going to practice this week, but he plans on playing.
Yes.
So it's going to be running back by committee. I think you need to be committed to the run. Throwing the ball that much, you haven't seen this defense a lot. The 49ers defense is much improved from last year. They are faster. The kid Greenlaw that they drafted, the linebacker, is a player. They found a fifth round steal. He's a player. They brought in Quan Alexander and the linebacking core. When they have those guys on the field, they are fast. They are nasty. I mean, they show it with rude intentions. Every time they get to the ball, they play with attitude. They can work in space. They play to run well. The secondary has gotten better. And then you know about all the big boys. They have put so much draft capital into those big boys up front and then even going out to get D Ford. They can hunt up front. So I think the way to negate speed is to come right at it. That really is what someone has to do right now. Both of their games, they've gotten themselves in a position to where teams had to throw the ball against them. And if ask Andy Dalton, you're going to get beaten up. And Rudolph is going to be, he's going to be one big bruise if that's what happens. So you're going to have to find a way, Rudolph needs to, and this is going to be interesting because that offense is, because you have been as an offensive coordinator, you have the luxury of having these long developing routes down the field. That's a major part of the offense. Yes, you'll throw some of the quick balls in there, but so much of that offense is about throwing the ball deep down the field because you have that elite arm and you have this impossible guy to tackle with one guy, that first shot in you know, at the quarterback position. How much of that do you have to get out of your game plan because of the new quarterback? That's what you're going to have to find out over time. which plays can stay in there. But by running those plays, yes, you can still throw them, but your quarterback is going to get beaten up. Do you want to risk him versus this team that rushes the quarterback the way that they do? That's going to be an interesting chess match right there. But the answer to the question, it's about attacking downhill. I get the ball out quick and run straight downhill. Don't try to make it a side-to-side game. These guys are just too fast. That front seven is just too fast to try to run away from.
That's a great point. And the Steelers haven't done a great job of committing to the run the first few games. I'm sure they will be recommitted, especially with having a backup quarterback in there. And you know what? I mean, hey, I'm being serious. We could talk for hours with you, Eric, but we want to let you go here. We've covered pretty much everything. I want to let you have a life of your own here before we just hoard you all night long. But this was fantastic, man. This was really awesome. I know that our audience is going to really enjoy this. We really enjoyed talking to you. It's a shame that the Niners and the Steelers only play every 4 years or whatever. Otherwise, we could get you on more often. But hopefully we can do something again in the future.
Sounds good, guys. Enjoy talking to you.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
All right. Take it easy.
Okay. It's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.